So, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Datengarten number 93, live from the Berlin residence of the Chaos Computer Club. Today we are doing basically a deep dive into the Linux graphics architecture and into the Linux kernel, or basically software stack and Android. And for this, I want you to welcome Robert Voss. A warm welcome and a warm applause, please. And yeah, he will tell us tonight on how to run Android on the mainline graphics stack. So, after the show, we will do a nice little Q&A session, and for all the questions to be on the record and in the stream, please wait until I come to you with the microphone. And now, and raise your hands. Yeah, so I can't read your minds, unfortunately. Well, maybe it's better. Okay, so please welcome Robert Voss, and to each one of you, have fun.
Okay. So let's get started. This slide deck here is a little bit corporate-y, but I didn't feel like redoing it, so please excuse the corporate branding. Also, feel free to interrupt me at any time if something's confusing or just not clear or for whatever reason. The idea is to be as enlightening as possible. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the Android graphics stack, what it looks like, and maybe what's happening to it, and how you can really take advantage of it. So I mostly work on this stuff professionally, like bringing up Android on weird hardware. That's a thing that I do for money, and I do it for Collabora. So yeah, let's get started. This is the agenda. We're going to have a look at the history of Android. We're going to have a look about at Android on mainline. And mainline is sort of this hand-wavy term. Mainline is just the normal Linux graphics stack in this case, or the normal Linux whatever. That's what we typically refer to as mainline. Things get forked all the time, and forks are not the mainline. So that's the only distinction here. So mainline is the upstream. We're going to have a look at the current status of this stuff, and also at the like bigger picture of Android and Linux, and how this stuff sort of hangs together. This is the current number of lines of diff between the Qualcomm MSM, which is the mobile kernel, against the upstream Linux kernel. So you can see that it's between, let's say, 1.5 and like 3.5 million lines of code, which is quite a lot. And there's not really like a clear trend here. So it seems to be like a semi-permanent situation. And there's a reason for this. Android forked the Linux kernel, which is fine. That's open source. That's good. But that's where the diff began. And they did it for very good reasons. The Linux kernel, as it was when Android really started going, wasn't really suitable for like a low-power mobile-type environment. Specifically, a better graphics stack was needed. And better is also very like hand-wavy. But there are some specifics that the graphics stack very much didn't live up to or fulfill. Specifically, low power support. And low power support sort of means a lot of things. For example, there's hardware blocks in your cell phone that does things very, very efficiently, for example, for outputting actual pixels to your screen. This is stuff that maybe traditionally hasn't been paid attention to on the desktop, because what's a few watts here and there? Like, no one's counting. We're all friends here. But in a mobile scenario, you really care. Like, that translates into battery time very quickly. So that was needed. There's also this concept of atomic instructions and operations. So in the graphic space, that essentially means the ability to do a bunch of stuff and have them, like, let's say, like you can change the resolution, you can change the update refresh frequency, and you can also change like bit depths and stuff like this, just parameters of the display. And you want to be able to like apply those. So you want to be able to do it at the same time too. So without atomic support, you can end up in a situation where you apply like a new resolution, you apply a new refresh rate, but then your third change doesn't really apply. So you really don't know where you are in terms of what's been added and what's not. So that causes a lot of bugs. And in order to fix that, a system called Atomic Operations was added to the graphic stack. Specifically, it was added to the Android Atomic Display Framework, the ADF. And this was something that was added to the Android kernel. It never lived in the mainline normal Linux kernel. It never existed there. But it scratched all of the Android needs for graphics. So unfortunately for us, it's not extensible. It just deals with this very narrow use case of you having a cell phone. That's all it cares about, and that's all it fixes, which isn't really good enough for the Linux kernel, which is used for a bunch of different applications. You can't just fix one thing and then be happy about it. You have to have a more generic solution. The atomic support only extended to planes. And we'll get into what a plane is, but a plane is essentially a part, like a square that you're going to output to your display. So it can be the status bar, and another plane can be the background, and they're all sort of combined somehow. And you want to be able to apply operations to them in an atomic manner. And the worst part in terms of upstreaming the ADF to the Linux kernel is that it doesn't really build on top of what was there before. It's just this entirely independent thing, which means that all the drivers have to be rewritten to support it. And it's sort of a nightmare scenario in terms of having open source drivers and having them work with this. You have to implement the old API and the new API, and no one's really interested in doing that. So the conclusion was that this isn't really upstreamable. This is good, it works, it helps, but it doesn't solve our issues. So another solution was introduced, the mainline Atomic KMS API. So previously, we had the KMS kernel mode setting. You may remember it from, I don't know, Pharonix stories from back in the day, I guess. The atomic part is basically integrating atomic or support for atomic operations on top of KMS. And it supports all of the ADF use cases, which is good. Like, you can just run this on your cell phone, and it'll do all the things that you need it to do. It also uses a system called properties that attach to different parts of infrastructure of the graphic stack. Like planes, for example, they can have properties. There are also other parts like connectors and encoders and stuff like that, and they all can have properties attached to them. And properties are essentially just strings, like a string value mapping, that you can apply to these things, which makes it very generic and easily extendable. And now it is replacing ADF in the kernel vendor trees, which is nice. That means that ARM and Qualcomm and all the big GPU vendors in the mobile space will be shipping stuff that supports KMS going forward. It's definitely like a slow process, but everyone seems to be on board. So that means that your cell phone will use the same APIs that your desktop uses, which is very nice for us, especially when it comes to the Android use case. So with this background in mind, let's have a look at what Android on mainline actually looks like. And this is essentially it. So there's a few boxes. There are the apps on top. This is like really what you care about. Like it's all about the apps. Below it, we have a component called Surface Flinger. And Surface Flinger does a sort of mediation between all of the apps. So everything in Android is an app. Like the status bar is an app. The clock is an app. The navigational bar is an app. Like everything's an app. And they have to be integrated and combined in a reasonable manner. And this is what Surface Flinger does. It sort of talks to all of the applications, figures out what they want to show, and then combines it, and then shoves it down to the hardware. Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm getting taped.
Yeah, you're getting some last-minute bug fixes. This is basically patching.
Literally patching me. All right.
Am Mund.
No more speaking. I'll just point. Hand wave.
Like this.
Yeah? It's better? All right.
Like perfect.
80% improved. Okay. Cool. So, Surface Flinger is a thing. It talks to applications, and it interacts with the hardware. And it does that through the HWC2 API, which we'll get into. Let's get into what Surface Flinger actually does first, though. So here is an Android desktop. It has a bunch of stuff going on, like a background, a status bar, a navigational bar. And as you see, these sort of overlap, and it's fine. Like these are all backed by just memory buffers that have like some information attached to them, like the pixel format, that kind of stuff, and the position, the size. And they're all combined with the background, for example. And the combining is done by Surface Flinger. So these layers have a depth order, a Z order, and the process of combining them is called composing layers. And it's basically just stacking them on top of each other according to the depth rules. And this composition is then shoved through the hardware, through the HWC2 API. Surface Flinger speaks HWC to the composer. And the composer is a part of the vendor driver. It's intentionally a blob here. We'll get into what's in the blob in a little bit. The hardware composer does some things. Like this all seems very complicated. Like, yeah, we have layers. And why do we have layers exactly? Why just not, you know, write pixels to a buffer and then shove that at the door? That would be a lot easier. But there's a good reason for doing it this way, partly for having apps in organize and sort of be easily integrated into, with each other, but also for power efficiency and performance reasons. So the hardware composer does a few things. It receives layers through the HWC API. And each layer has stuff like a position, like XY coordinates and a size. It also has pixel formats, that kind of stuff. It also has a Z order. What it then does is it sort of optimizes these layers for being outputted to actual hardware. And what that means, it's sort of dealing with hardware. So dealing with hardware is tricky because you have hard limitations. You can't just do whatever you feel like. So for example, before we were looking at this this Android desktop, and it had, we counted three layers, but there are actually more. Like there are the icons that you can click on, and you get up to a fairly large number pretty quickly. And the problem with that is that hardware for dealing with this stuff, for dealing with the composition, is only able to support commonly up to 4 layers. Most hardware only deals with 1 or 2. But 4 is sort of the Android goal. You should have support for 4 layers if you want to ship Android on your device. Going beyond that seems like a very simple way to solve problems. Just add more layers in hardware, it's fine. But it turns out that it's very expensive. Like, you don't want to pay too much for a simple piece of display IP. Like, it's not all that interesting. And there are diminishing returns. So like keeping it at 4 is sort of reasonable. But what happens then when you have, let's say, 5 layers in your actual composition? What do you do with the last one? And this is where you get to be a little bit clever. So if you are clever, you can be very selective or selectively choose which layers to combine. So you can take, for example, the smallest layers and combine them to a new layer in software or using the GPU. And now you're down to having 4 again. And then you can just output them, like throw them out the door and have the display hardware deal with it. And you're done. Like, you'll be as efficient as you possibly can be in that situation. So that operation of combining layers is called squashing layers. You just smush them into one. And typically, it's done by the GPU using just OpenGL or Vulkan or whatever, nothing fancy. You can also do it on the CPU, but that's a terrible idea, so don't. And then you just output the layers to the display hardware. So the display hardware will receive like 4 buffers and some associated information, and then just do whatever it does. The display hardware is different from or between different manufacturers, and there's a lot of variety in there. Many of the vendors feel like this is where their secret sauce is. This is the really important stuff. But in reality, they all sort of do the same thing. But they all also like implement it a little bit differently. And it's not like a uniform ABI that you can talk to. So you have to know what ARM does to interact with ARM hardware, and you have to know what Qualcomm does to interact with Qualcomm hardware. So back to this part. So the vendor driver, this is the non-kernel part of the driver. So you don't want to run all of your driver inside of the kernel for various reasons, like security, for example, and also it's just a messier space to be in if you can be in user space. And it contains a few things. It contains a hardware composer, that part we've been talking about. It contains implementations for OpenGL or Vulkan. What else? OpenVX. I don't know. There's lots of standards, like OpenCL. And not all are supported all of the time, but this is a rough idea of what's in there. There's also a memory allocator. We'll get into that. That's a touchy subject. But there exists a bunch of memory allocators. There's not a good solution for it. It's a giant mess, but every vendor ships their own. And below that, there's the Linux kernel, of course. So that's the entire stack, if you're just looking at the Android variety. So there's the apps, the Surface Flinger, the driver, and the kernel. But now Mainline has a good graphics API, so we can just use that. Why do this the Android way? In fact, some devices have shipped using it, like the Google Pixel C, which admittedly is a pretty old device by now. But if you want to ship a device, you have to have an HWC implementation somewhere. Like, some part of this has to implement a hardware composer and speak the HWC ABI, or you're not going to have any fun. And Mesa, which is where typically these things are implemented in the Linux space. So Mesa implements OpenGL, Vulkan, OpenCL, like all kinds of graphical APIs. But it very much doesn't implement HWC, nor does the Linux kernel. It most certainly doesn't implement it, in fact. So we need a part that does it. And that's where DRM Hardware Composer comes in. And the name really says it all. DRM is the Linux graphics subsystem. Hardware Composer, yeah, it interacts, or it's sort of the glue between those things. And it doesn't do a lot of things besides that. And it sort of fits in like this. So this is the blob with a proprietary driver, typically, like the ARM driver or, you know, whatever it may be. And we can break that down. On the open source, in the open source stack, there's the kernel, then there's the user space driver, which is typically Mesa and some other junk. And then there's a DRM hardware composer, which implements the HWC2 API. We can break this down a little bit further. So there's the kernel that contains the DRM graphics subsystem. And then in user space, there's Mesa and libDRM, which is what DRM Hardware Composer is built on top of. But then there's more. Then there's Graloc. In fact, Graloc is its own can of worms. And there's not just one Graloc. In fact, there's no single project that's called Graloc. There's GBM Graloc, there's DRM Graloc, there's Mini GBM, there's Mini GBM forked by Intel, and there's a whole bunch of them. And it's all very confusing and essentially really a bit of an unsolved problem. Like every vendor does their own thing, and there's no code base that supports all of the vendors or multiple vendors. So whenever you deploy this stuff on a platform, you'll have to make sure that the memory allocator supports whatever hardware you happen to be using and does it well. You can do it poorly too, but you'll see bad battery life, essentially. Yeah. So DRM Hardware Composer is a project that came out of Google. It came out of Google for the Pixel C project, and it came out of the Chromium OS group. There's Chromium OS, there's the Android group, and they're very much separate beings. They do their own thing and rarely overlap too much. And this project has now been moved to freedesktop.org, which you may have heard of. Freedesktop.org is where all of open source graphics, or all of the open source graphics stack lives, essentially. So that's Mesa, that's the X-Server, that's Wayland, that's libinput, whatever else, like all of it. And this move was done essentially like over a conference very quickly. And it was done by a few Googlers. These guys, Sean Paul, Pune Kumar, Marissa Wall. Sean Paul actually wrote all of DRM Hardware Composer, or most of DRM Hardware Composer. Now there's a bunch more contributors since the move. The move happened like a year ago, and it's sort of alive now. People are actually sending in patches and putting like some effort in. And if you want to contribute, you can. That's the URL. It's just a GitLab instance. It's nothing fancy. So with this project, you can run Android on top of any hardware that has an open source driver, essentially. That's true for, I think all of the open source drivers support the features needed. So you can run it on, you can run Android on top of an NVIDIA graphics card, you can run it on top of like a Radeon machine, you can run it on an Intel CPU, you can do whatever you want, essentially. And if you want to get into this space and try this stuff out, there's a project that does exactly that. That's called Android x86. And it's very much like a grassroots type project. But they run Android on top of all kinds of weird hardware, mostly because they like doing that, I think. I don't know. It strikes me as being a little bit masochistic, I guess. But, you know, whatever floats your boat. It's certainly helpful for me, like interacting with them. Yeah, back to the bigger picture of this stuff. Why does any of this junk matter? This is just a small project. In Android, no one really uses Android on the open source space. There's Android x86, but then there's nothing really else. And it's not just about it like feeling good to use open source stuff and having it like be usable in a different on different hardware, but it's because it's better, and it's better in a few different ways. For example, this is something that we keep seeing. New features introduced in the Android kernel. For example, a graphical feature called Fences was introduced a good while back. It took like 5 years for it to be moved into the normal Linux kernel, but now that's a feature we have. And that's something that's sort of new, I would say. It's slowly happening. And projects like DRM Hardware Composer matter in the sense that they sort of enable this migration. So if you can take a feature from Android, run it on normal Linux, and just prove that it works, people in the normal Linux or the upstream Linux community are kind of keen on just integrating it. I mean, if it works, and if you can prove that it works, everyone basically wants it. So that really allows us to move stuff from Android to the normal Linux kernel. But this doesn't really apply to all kernel subsystems. If we have a look at this chart here, you can see that, or rather, let me explain the chart. So this is a breakdown of where in which subsystem the number of lines of diff between the mainline kernel and the Qualcomm version 4.9 diff is. And if you have a look at the chart, it's mostly drivers. Some architecture, I guess. But much of this stuff is not being moved, which is interesting. The size of the diff seems to be fairly constant, like we saw in the beginning. And it's not entirely clear where this is going, like long term. If you talk to vendors, they don't really care. Like they sell hardware. That's what they care about. They need software in order to sell hardware, but they don't really care about upstreaming stuff because of any like feel-good type reasons. Like so, if they need to upstream stuff in order to sell hardware, they will. If not, they won't. It should be said that Google is pushing them pretty hard to actually be better at this. For good reasons, and they're reluctant, to say the least. But it's going to happen, which means that this diff should at least partially shrink a little bit. But for some subsystems and some drivers, it really never will. If you look at, for example, a driver for a fingerprint reader, there's really not a lot to the driver. Like it's all done in firmware, so you have a driver that essentially loads a blob into the device, and then the device runs the blob, and that's it. Like the blob is still there. The blob is probably at least signed, maybe encrypted. Like you can't really do anything to it. It just is there. So having a driver like that isn't really all that interesting to anyone, which means that partially this diff is not going to go away, but partially it will. Hopefully anyway. There are a few reasons for wanting to push vendors closer to upstream, like increasing the development speed. Like if your device is already supported, or a previous generation is already supported upstream, the effort required to support something new is super low. You just make the required changes, and it'll be simple to upstream them too. And this lowers development costs. And also, since they're living upstream, you're seeing increased quality. Like people are running this stuff, and they'll hopefully like report bugs and fix them. There will be just more eyes. I mean, more eyes on a code base is sort of something you hear a lot, and it doesn't necessarily help. Like if we think about the issues we've been seeing in OpenSSL, for example. Like I'm sure a lot of people looked at OpenSSL, and there were super bad bugs in there, but it can't hurt anyway. It it will make the situation a little bit better, at the very least. And if the open source driver and open source stack is competitive, we'll continue to push open source adoption forward, which means more open source stuff, which is good for us, like the end users, like more power and less power to the vendors. And yeah, that's about it for the mainline graphics stack on Android. Does anyone have any questions?
Nice. So, questions. Right.
Okay. In the back. Give me a sec. I'm right over.
Hey there. Thank you very much. So, sorry, it takes me a bit to form the question. So vendors, you say you think vendors will indeed move towards open source because they're essentially being forced to. Do they not recognize the benefits that, I mean, in particular, the development costs and the development time that they need to put in, right?
I mean, they're so incredibly far away from doing stuff upstream now. Like, for example, with Qualcomm, I know they have a common kernel version for the products they're currently selling. And then they have a fork for each chipset. And for each chipset, they have a fork for each device. Like, they...
Yeah, the typical traditional.
Which must be incredibly painful. Like, I can't imagine a more painful scenario.
Well, if the thing is, if they know nothing else, and then if they have been doing this for a long time, then their whole organization is sort of built together with this structure. I mean, I know the same situation from other subsystems or other areas, let's say. And if it fits the organization, then it might actually be easier for them, and it might be like, and it probably is very difficult for them to change to anything else. I guess that's why they're pushing back, but hopefully they will learn the benefits.
Yeah, and I mean there are incentives for Google, for example, to push for this stuff. They want it because it would be better for them. It's just a matter of making vendors actually do this stuff, which is easier said than done. But I think they can be shipped away at and have been. Like for example, with Qualcomm, for the past, I think, 5-ish years, there's been a lot of active development with or for their GPU, and now it's very well supported. Like, it's very mature, and it's like as fast and as compatible as their proprietary version. And in fact, they are sort of contributing to it too. So they do have a half-assedly supported open source driver. I mean, the community is doing fantastic work, but Qualcomm is sort of just contributing whenever they feel like, which is good. I mean, that's better than nothing, for sure.
All right. And I have one other question. Can you give some outlook on what your impression is of how Android will develop in the next couple of years, let's say? Do you think that it is indeed so tightly tied into Linux or coupled with Linux necessarily?
Well, yeah, I guess not necessarily. Like, there are some semi-clean like lines where you can just cut Linux out, I think, if you wanted to. I know nothing about Fuchsia and that kind of stuff, which is, yeah, allegedly a kernel that Google is working on that may replace Linux, maybe not. I have no idea. But it's reasonably feasible to replace it if you want to. I mean, writing a new kernel from scratch is like an immense amount of work. But they have also immense amounts of money, so maybe. I mean, if they feel like it.
All right, thanks.
So, do we have any more questions from the audience? I think it was really nice to see that the diff was seemingly shrinking a bit. However, the data points are not so many.
Yeah, we can do with some more.
Are there any long-term statistics maybe on this?
This is just what I gathered in 20 minutes of shell scripting. So no one really publishes this stuff. I mean, I don't think it's in the vendor's interest to publish this stuff. It doesn't look so good because it isn't. But you can have a look around. It's slightly messy data, like which vendor branch do you actually choose, which is a fair comparison. And there are lots and lots of branches, and they're all out there. You just have to find them. And all of the vendors publish them, they have to. So it's just a matter of finding a vendor branch that exists for a bunch of versions. Typically, they'll have a branch that has all of the stable kernel branches reflected. Or one for each stable kernel branch. So 4.9, 4.14, and so on. Yeah, so you can just look it up.
Yeah. All right. So when there are no more questions, then please thank you. Please thank our speaker, Robert Voss. A warm applause. And to you, thank you for your attention and have a great evening and bye-bye until next time.